I'm downloading a mod for this movie to put Kurt Russell in a baby slut t-shirt and camo capris, Taylor.
And, you know, here's the thing. Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week, we watched 1982's The Thing, directed by your friend and mine, John Carpenter, starring Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley, Keith David, returning from, like, this is the Keith David block.
Yeah, we thought this was the Alien block. It's actually the Keith David block.
T.K. Carter, David Klenner, Richard Masser, and Donald Moffat. Also, my favorite actor in this movie, Jed the Dog.
The doggy!
Jed the Dog, a fucking actor. Give him his Oscar. Now.
He deserved it. He deserved an Oscar.
Trigger warnings out of the way. We got body horror. This is the body horror movie. If you don't like body horror, please don't watch The Thing. Also, please don't watch The Thing if you don't like animal death, because all the dogs in this movie die.
They do, and it's awful. It's very sad.
We also have themes of paranoia and suicide, and just sort of a general bleak overtone. I know that's not everybody's thing when it comes to horror movie. Get it? It's not everybody's thing. Ha ha. But we're going to be making that joke for the next hour, because it's funny to me and me only.
You just said it's the only thing.
Because it's the only thing.
Because it's the only thing.
I hate us. I think we should end this episode here.
Yeah, I agree. I think we need to stop doing the podcast.
Oh, what are your memories of this movie, Taylor?
This was another 100 Scariest Movie Moments first time watch in high school. For those not in the know, my introduction to the world of horror films was that I watched the Bravo TV 100 Scariest Movie Moments special, and I basically went down on the list and watched any of the movies in that special that I thought were cool and interesting sounding, and this was one of them, and it freaked the fuck out of me back then, and it still does. It's a very upsetting movie to watch. But also, so cool. I remember being fascinated by the practical effects in this movie.
I remember I made a note as I was watching this movie. I almost wrote down, like, oh, I love the practical effects. And then it felt like sitting there and being like, wow, the practical effects in The Thing are so good. The water in this ocean sure is wet.
Yeah, right? Like, this is the THEE practical effects horror film.
Yeah, we'll get into that whole thing later. We'll get into the whole thing. Yeah.
I was so perversely fascinated in high school when I first watched this movie by the defibrillator scene specifically. Because remember, and if you've seen the movie, you know what scene I'm talking about. Also, obligatory, I say this every time, we're going to be spoiling the film. If none of the trigger warnings freak you out, you should watch it. It's very good. But we are going to be just talking about everything that happens in it with no regard for whether or not we're spoiling it for somebody, so sorry. But yeah, I remember the defibrillator scene and being like, wow, that is so cool. And then just consuming every bit of behind the scenes information that I could get my grubby little 15-year-old mitts on about how they made that scene. Because it was so fascinating to me. I was like, it looks so good. How they do that?
And the answer is by spending a lot of money.
Yes, exactly.
This was my first time watching this movie all the way through. I started watching it a little while ago with Jamie and Shelby. And I think when we started watching it, it was like A, very late at night, and B, I can't remember exactly when, but I think we had just come back from like doing something all day. And we were just like, I want to watch a movie, though. Let's put on a movie. And we put on The Thing, because none of us, I think Jamie and Shelby had seen it, but I hadn't still. But we only got about maybe 20 minutes in, because it was really late, and we were all really tired.
Yeah, this isn't just a movie you can, like, throw on. This is, like, you gotta be ready to sit down and watch The Thing, you know?
Yeah, you gotta be into it. So this was my first time watching it, and let me tell you, watching this movie on a 94-degree day in July, with the air conditioner blasting on me, was a trip.
Yeah. I feel like that's either the best or the worst way to consume this film.
It felt like both. At any given moment, it was either the best way or the worst way.
It just depends on the minute, baby.
Yep. All right, let's see what Google has to say about the plot of this movie.
I am interested because it's a...
It seems like a fairly... I mean, the actual summary of the movie, ladies and gentlemen, is a group of men in the Arctic play the world's very first game of Among Us.
You know,
Yeah.
That's it. Just, you know.
Yeah. You know? I know. You know Among Us? Sus?
I do.
Sus Among Us?
Sus Among Us.
Fuck. All right, we got it out of the way. We're not going to do it again for the rest of the episode, we promise.
You need to get it. It's like when Hitchcock did his cameo in the first, like, 5 minutes of Psycho, because he knew that if he didn't do it then, people were going to be waiting for it for the rest of the movie. That's this, but it's like, we got our Among Us joke out. We're
done. You think these guys knew about Among Us?
I think they learned how to play it over the course of the film.
I do, too.
This is one long Among Us tutorial.
Oh, okay. What's okay, it's done.
What does
it's
Google
done.
Have to say about the plot of the film?
It's done. It's done. We did it. It's out of the way. Listen. We waited. How long has it fucking been? How long have we been recording?
Oh, 6 minutes and 37 seconds.
We got, okay, 6 minutes. Good. Cool. We're done. No more. In remote Antarctica, a group of American research scientists are disturbed at their base camp by a helicopter shooting at a sled dog. When they take in the dog, it brutally attacks both human beings and canines in camp, and they discover that the beast can assume the shape of its victims. A resourceful helicopter pilot and the camp doctor lead the camp crew in a desperate, gory battle against the vicious creatures before it picks them off, one by one. I feel like these Google summaries are either, like, extraordinarily detailed, like this one, or they're just like one sentence and a very vague bullshit.
It depends on if it's like an actual person writing them or if it's an unpaid like intern who's just like shown like the trailer and they're like, write a summary, we're gonna put on Google.
Yeah.
I have a fun fact before we start discussing this film.
Please do.
Have you ever heard of the Amundsen Scott South Pole Station?
I have not.
It is an astronomical observatory It is an astronomical observatory in the South Pole. And every year, the researchers there screen this film and The Shining before the long winter blackout, where they are basically stuck there with no one coming to get them for a long time. And every year they screen The Thing and The Shining.
These are the funniest people on earth.
I had to get that out of the way right at the beginning because I feel like I wanted to, like, put it out there because I do think, like, it's the funniest thing on earth, but I can't think of a good, like, segue into it. But yeah, I think these astronomers are the funniest people alive.
That's so fucking good.
Like,
I feel like this was a movie to watch. This was a movie to watch in all cat, like, capitalized first letter of every word during COVID.
Yes. Oh my god.
The video, I do want to shout out a video essay, as I do oftentimes on this podcast, that I watched in preparation. It is called The Thing, Horror in Isolation, and I forgot the channel name, but if you just look it up, The Thing, Horror in Isolation, it has a lot of, like, both analysis of the themes of the film and some behind the scenes stuff. It's a good watch if you're interested in this movie.
Mm.
Where to start?
God, yeah, where to start? Puppies!
Puppies! Okay, I want to talk a little bit about Jed the dog, actually.
Those dogs died for our sins.
I have a Tumblr post here. And
oh, boy!
No, it's an informative Tumblr post. Not one of the many The Thing 1982 shit posts that there are out there. I do just want to talk real quick. Like, this dog is an actor. Like,
oh?
Even for a dog performance, this dog, like, knocked it out of the fucking park. There were so many instances in this movie where he somehow, and I don't know, his name was Jed. He was an Alaskan Malamute wolf dog. And I don't know if being part wolf, like, gave him a higher intelligence or what, but a lot of the people who worked on the movie, according to them, this dog seemed to have some kind of understanding of, like, what was expected of him. And how to, like, intuitively sort of behave in the way that they needed him to behave.
Well, obviously, the answer to this is that there was an alien in the dog.
It's true. It's true.
No, I'm kidding.
With a lot of dog actors, they tend to, and you can see this with the other dogs in the movie a bit, when they bark, when dog actors are barking, they're usually excited and not like angry or scared. And you can see they're like bouncing around with their tails wagging because they're doing a trick. They're doing a good job and they're going to get a treat from their handler once somebody calls cut. Jed is not like this.
Jed knows.
If you fucking watch this dog in this movie, the way that he is able to stand just like so unnaturally still, no movement, no tail wagging, no panting, no nothing, just like complete and utter focus, is extremely uncommon with a dog. Especially when he does not even look at the fucking camera ever. The only time he looks at the camera is when it's spooky and he's supposed to look at the camera to make us feel like us, the audience, feel like he's looking at us because he wants to infect us next. And I just love this dog so much, and I think he should get an Oscar.
Good for him. Good for him.
Good for him.
Was he in any other movies, do you know?
I actually think he was. Let me look it up really quick. So Jed was a Pacific Northwest animal actor known for his roles in White Fang, White Fang 2, The Journey of Natty Gunn, and The Thing.
Oh, work. So he had a little bit of a career. Love that.
He had
for
a
him.
Career.
He was an actor.
He was.
He was a thespian.
He died in 1995, so like good long life on this
Damn.
Dog. He was born in 77 and died in 95.
Jesus. 20 years is so long.
Good for him.
Good for Jed. Oh, see, this is, I think he was an alien, actually.
I do too. But he was a helpful alien.
He was a nice, good alien who was sent to do good.
To
and
be
to
in
help
movies.
Us. Yeah.
He wanted to be an actor.
He's the Billy Elliot of aliens.
I want to use aliens to segue into what I think is really interesting about this movie. One of the many things that I think is very interesting about this movie. But like, I feel like every time I talk about a John Carpenter movie, right, the story is always, everyone thought this movie sucked dick and balls when it came out, but then, like, it became a beloved staple of the horror genre.
Yeah, that's true. He does
like,
have
this
a track
is the story of
that.
Both Halloween and The Thing.
I also think it's really based that this is, like, the first of what people call John Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy, which is such a funny fucking name. For, like, it is always really funny to me when people, like, Pasolini, like, Pier Paolo Pasolini has, like, the Trilogy of Life and the Trilogy of Death. Mm-hmm. And John Carpenter has the Apocalypse Trilogy, which is this, Prince of Darkness, and In the Mouth of Madness. I have only seen this.
Yeah, I have too. I need to watch
I should probably
John
watch
Carpenter.
Those other two. I've heard In the Mouth of Madness is very good. I've heard mixed things about Prince of Darkness.
I need to watch more John Carpenter in general. I think I've only seen this in Halloween, which is fucking shameful.
Listen, our king John Carpenter, he doesn't give a fuck if you watch his movies or not.
It's true. It's true.
He's here to play video games and get paid. Good for him.
Good for him.
Have I mentioned I love John Carpenter and I think he's the funniest person alive?
He's so fucking funny.
He's so good. Just like a brief second, I just want to talk about how much I love John Carpenter.
He's like the
so
Harrison
funny.
Ford of directors.
He really is. My favorite thing. Okay, just brief sidebar, because now I need to talk about John Carpenter. Because there's the story about John Carpenter that I love. So, a certain director who directed a movie called The Twilight Zone, who has a son who sucks and who also sucks and who I won't name by name, had a like a sort of like frequent like meeting of like a bunch of different horror directors and writers that he would call like the masters of horror. And John Carpenter was in that little group in like the 80s and 90s. And then later on, like fairly recently, I think somebody asked John Carpenter and about like, well, what about all those dinners that you used to go to at director I won't name's house? And he was like, yeah, all those guys suck and are really pretentious. And I don't like them. So I stopped going and hanging out with them.
I love him. Oh, my God.
And he was, like, naming names, too. He was like, this guy sucks, and this guy's annoying, and I don't like this guy. He's so funny. Like,
our fucking king. Slays. I truly love when, like, a celebrity just doesn't give a fuck.
You know when you're so successful that you don't have to give a fuck anymore? John Carpenter is living that life, and I fucking love it for him.
He just doesn't give a shit. He and Harrison Ford are just, like, spiritually grasping hands.
Yes! Yeah, oh my God. But yeah, that's my brief sidebar. I think it's very funny how little of a shit he gives about anything ever, and I aspire to that level of chill in my life.
We should all be a little more like John Carpenter.
God, yeah, it's so fucking true. We should all dream to be that cool and chill one day. Anyway, back to the film at hand. Because right. Despite also being cool as hell, John Carpenter is also like a genuine genius and a master filmmaker. And this movie's fantastic.
The audience reception to this was really interesting because the thing that fascinates me the most about horror in general as a broad subject is what audience reception to horror movies means about the general zeitgeist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, no one liked this movie because it was like just so fucking like bleak. Mm-hmm. And you know, 82, we're in like the biggest recession since World War II. We are not doing well, and I'm pretty sure that going to see The Thing is not making anybody feel better. Especially when the other movies like it's competing with are like Blade Runner and E.T. E.T. especially is really interesting to me.
It's another alien movie. Thing,
as competing with The Thing, because E.T. is all about, you know, human kids find a cuddly alien and help him get home. It's like the antithesis of The Thing. It's great. Yeah. And it's funny to me that, like, I mean, E.T. is still kind of in the cultural, like, people know of E.T., but I feel like it's nowhere near as well known as The Thing now, or in terms of, like, I think when you think about E.T., like, it's just, oh, it's that charming classic movie I watched when I was a kid. The Thing is still relevant.
Yeah, like, I don't know anybody who, as an adult, is like, I would like to watch E.T. today.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in the mood to watch E.T. But, like, people be sitting down and watching The Thing, because it's good.
Yeah. And I think that's a nice little bit of retribution that The Thing got, that it's still relevant in the more, it is now more relevant in the conversation than E.T. And I think that's valid.
Fuck E.T.
I think that's Yasin's slang. Yeah, fuck E.T. Fuck that fuck. No.
E.T. Scared the shit out of me when I was a child, so actually.
E.T. also scared the shit out of me when I was a child.
Like, do fuck E.T., actually. Because E.T. scared me.
Fuck that guy.
And he wasn't supposed to. This movie is supposed to scare you, and it does. This movie is so scary.
Oh my God. This movie has never stopped being scary.
No.
Ever. I think this movie has only gotten more scary in our own, like, current climate.
Oh, I completely agree. I was worried that, like, going back to it after, the last time that I watched it was when I was a teenager. So whenever I watch a movie that, like, the last time I watched it, I was, again, we were just talking off mic about how, like, everyone was an idiot when they were 15.
Yeah.
So going back and watching a movie that you may have watched when you were that age and enjoyed is always a gamble, because sometimes you're like, oh wow, that was slay. And then sometimes you're like, what was my 15-year-old self thinking or doing? And thankfully, this movie holds the fuck up. It is so scary.
Oh my God, everything about this movie holds up. Like, what a fucking watertight goddamn movie. I mean, we are 20 minutes in. You want to talk about the fucking practical effects in this movie, Taylor?
God, I think we have to. So, defibrillator scene, the iconic scene of the film.
I do, before we get started, like, going into specific, what interested me, and that I didn't notice upon watching the movie through, but, like, if you can pick it out, pretty much all of the, like, practical body horror effect stuff was actually filmed after the film wrapped, because the process of making all of the like props and the animatronics and the makeup and everything was so extensive and it took so long that they just didn't have it ready, a lot of it ready in time. So they had to like go and they had to film a lot of the alien shots after the film, after the movie wrapped.
That's wild to me because they are really integrated so seamlessly that I would not have even.
Yeah, the way John Carpenter shot this movie, like you would not be able to tell. And obviously, I'm sure they knew beforehand going in, like, okay, yeah. we're gonna have to like piece this together at the end. And I think they did it to extreme effect.
Oh, completely agree. I think that also. One thing that really works in this film's favor in terms of the practical effects is the, this feels like a weird thing to say in a movie like this, but like the restraint of mm-hmm. a lot of it in that like there are very specific scenes in which you see horrific things in all of their like full on the camera, disgusting, nasty glory. But a lot of the movie is just not that. This is not a movie where bonkers nonsense is being thrown at you constantly. Like, it is very well done in that they save those moments for when they are really highly effective and they fuck with you.
And they do, they build the tension between those scenes so well that every time they start, it's like getting fucking punched in the face.
Yeah, because you never see them coming.
No.
I mean, I did because I'd seen the movie before. But like, if you're watching the movie for the first time, you don't see them coming.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the dog one coming because that's about the point to where we watched last time. Mm-hmm. But after that, like, it's just, I mean, there's a huge stretch between the defibrillator scene and the dog scene, especially.
Yeah.
Where nothing, I mean, things are happening, but they're not like, you know, things.
Yeah, it's not alien.
Yeah. And I, God, fucked up if true.
That's all you can really say about some of the effects in this movie. It's just like, man, fucked up if true.
Fucked up if true. It's the defibrillator and then also that guy's head, like, splitting open to become jaws. Like,
oh my God.
It's so
the
nasty.
The fucking, like, weird, like, flower opening up nastiness of the face.
Ugh, it's so gross.
It's so good. And I think the thing that makes the restraint of this movie really work in its favor is that it creates an environment in which crazy things can happen on screen. Because the stuff in this movie that is crazy is crazy.
Oh, it's fucking nuts.
It's nuts. Like,
it's like if you took, like a hereditary type movie and then just interspersed it with like malignant moments.
100%. So like that stuff is so wild and just like so strange that having them happen as little as they do makes gives the rest of the movie time to endear you to the characters and to make the movie feel like it is happening to real people. Mm-hmm. And it makes those moments hit harder because you're like, wow, what would I do if I was confronted as a normal ass person in my normal ass life with a thing that looked and acted like this? What do you
truly
do? Like, what do you even do? How do you cope with that?
Torch it.
Yeah, like that's what Kurt Russell does. Ah, MacReady.
Oh, he's a Taylor man.
The king.
A Taylor man.
Okay. For those of you who don't know, in the opening, I was referencing a Tumblr post where somebody was talking about how they wish you could download mods for movies. Because if they did, they would download a mod for The Thing that would put Kurt Russell in a little t-shirt that says baby slut and cargo capris. And I concur. I think more men should look like this. Men, what's stopping you from looking like this?
Cowardice. Raw
literally
cowardice.
Literally cowardice.
Raw cowardice.
This is masculinity.
You may not like it, but this is peak male performance.
No, like you're joking?
I'm not joking.
But it is.
I'm not joking, Taylor.
I'm not joking, bitch.
Listen, I'm gay, but he can get it. I know you're also gay, but like...
I'm gay too, and he can get it.
Okay, you're gay, but you're diseased.
It's true. I'm gay with, like, I'm a weird lesbian. Nobody look at me.
You're a problematic lesbian.
I really am, because I'm way too interested in men.
I've kept to cancel you on Twitter.
Just because I'm not attracted to them doesn't mean that I don't look at Kurt Russell in this movie and go, yeah, slay, work, exactly. Bitch. Exactly. Sometimes it's important as a lesbian to be able to look at a man and be like, he's doing it. He's doing
it. It's healthy. It's healthy. That's how I feel about Kurt Russell.
It's not for me, but he is doing it.
That's how I feel about Kurt Russell in this movie. Like, yeah. Slay.
Slay. He's slaying. In his stupid floppy hat, he's slaying.
I think the way that this movie positions humanity is really interesting to me. That's such a fucking philosophy-ass statement, but, like, I think sci-fi in general, and I think this also can kind of be said of E.T., just to bring it back to
E.T. It all comes back to E.T., baby.
Sci-fi in general tends to position humanity as special in some way.
I love Star Trek, but Star Trek is so guilty of this.
Yeah, it's a very, like, there's a lot of Star Trek
sci-fi, yeah.
Sci-fi out there. Like, there's a lot of, obviously, if you're a sci-fi and you're not borrowing from Star Trek, like, what are you doing? But yeah. At least to some degree. But here, like, humanity is just another step to this creature's, like, fucking domination plan, or not even a plan, it's just like what it's designed to do, because it's a virus essentially. And I think that may have also kind of played a part in why people didn't really like this movie when it first came out, because I'm, you know, the 80s is like Star Trek and Star Wars. I know Star Trek goes way, but you know, before the 80s, but you know what I mean, that sort of,
I think Next optimistic... Generation was only a few years after this movie, so
yeah,
Star Trek was still in the consciousness.
Very sort of optimistic, humanity-focused way of looking at sci-fi. And John Carpenter said, no, fuck you, humanity is just another fucking meal to this thing.
Yeah, I think, too, there's something very upsetting about... Because evil, right? Evil can be quantified. Like, we can look at a human, for instance. Like, this is the same thing with Skinamarink.
Yes.
Where it's like... If there was a person who was choosing to do evil things, you can look at that person and say, they are making an evil decision. They don't have to do it. They are choosing to do it because they suck. And that's a villain. That's what a villain is at their core. Even if the villain is not human, like, they're still a person making a bad decision. Mm-hmm. But with an enemy like this thing from this movie... It's not a conscious actor, really.
No.
It's just doing what it does, and what it does just happens to be infecting and killing people. And, like, what it does just happens to not be good for humans. But that doesn't mean that it is a bad actor, or, like, I don't know. We don't know anything about the aliens, like, culture or whatever, but, like...
It's essentially just an animal, or even, like I said, like a virus. It's just doing what it does.
The alien is a morally neutral thing. It's scary. It's not evil. And that, I think, is a lot to contemplate, especially in the sort of touchy-feely early 80s, where there's this sense that, like, things suck right now, but we can all pull together. And, you know, it's like Reaganism, like, we, you know, the hands across America kind of thing, you know? It's that, like, American outlook of, like, oh, you know, if we all hold hands and we can make everything better and we are so special. And this movie really does spit in the face of that, because here is a being that does not subscribe to human morality.
Mm-hmm.
It's really freaky to be faced with something that doesn't know that it's evil.
Yeah.
And man, I understand why a lot of the characters in this movie lost hope very, very quickly, because I think if I was in this situation, it would not take me very long to just be like, all right, boys, I'm gonna head out. Like,
yep. All right.
You gotta just be like, well, I'm walking off into the snow. Like, it's over for me.
Yep, I'm gone. Bye, everybody. I would rather take my chances with the fucking freezing to death.
Literally, like, I'm gonna walk out into the Arctic.
Like, thank you so much. I'm gone.
But then also, like, that wouldn't happen to me because there are no women in this film.
It's true.
There is one woman. It's the computer, and she is taken offline instantly. Good for her. She got out of there.
Well, hey, listen. We don't know the thing's gender.
That's true.
This could be, listen, this could be a girl power movie.
Oh my god. Oh, is the thing a good for her movie? Oh, work.
Oh, good for her.
Actually changed my mind. Take back everything that I said about it being like a morality neutral, like nameless enemy. Like, I support her.
She's just a girl boss building her empire.
I think simply that she should be allowed to do that.
Will this the is thing
anti-misogyny at its finest.
Will the thing be on the bug president's cabinet?
Yes, absolutely. I like that. Fantastic. We're just slowly building a cinematic universe.
I'm with her.
I'm with her. Hashtag I'm with her. But no, I do think, like, because I haven't seen the, like, 2011, I think it is, 2010 or 2011, prequel to this movie. But I know that there are women or a woman or, I don't know.
There are women. There's also CGI in it, which is just.
There is.
Just so depressing to find out about. And even more depressing to when I believe, and listen, this is just evidence that I saw in a YouTube comment, so don't quote me on it, but apparently the people working on The Thing 2011 did not want to use CGI. They had practical effects ready to go, and the studio demanded CGI, probably because CGI is inhuman. Capitalism destroys everything, folks. Don't forget that.
But I do think it's funny that the 2011 prequel was like, no, we gotta put a girl in here, because, like, this is a bit of a sausage fest. Like, I do think it's really funny because it is that, like, Lord of the Flies thing where, like, you'll see, like, joke posts online of people being like, well, if there was a lady in there, that wouldn't have happened.
There was a lady. Her name was The Thing. And she destroyed them
also,
all.
Also, speaking
a girl
of
boss.
Ladies, do you know who voiced the computer in this movie? Adrienne Barbeau from Creepshow. Fucking all
oh
wear your
God.
Balls for earrings, drinking a white Russian in the car, like, Billy.
Our
queen.
Fucking queen.
Go back
and
listen to the Creepshow episode, because Billy is a girl boss building her empire, too. But yeah, she did a little cameo in this movie as the voice of the computer, which I think rules.
That's
love
fun.
To see Adrienne Barbeau in things.
I like to see her getting. I hope she got a
Me
good check from this.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there is some sort of, like, analysis that you could make about the lack of women in this film. In that sort of, like, Lord of the Flies kind of way. Of, like, this is what happens
oh, for
when
sure.
dudes be getting together. This is, I mean, boys' night gone wrong.
Your letterbox for you fucking kill me. Boys' trip to Antarctica, gone wrong, gone sexual, not clickbait. Not gone sexual, not the pussy.
No. No, how did you make my joke worse? No, not the pussy.
Well, Taylor, I'll tell you how I made the joke worse, by including the
did.
Word pussy.
You did say that. And you get after me for saying horrible things. You're equally culpable.
It's
you
true.
Came on the air and
it's
said
true.
Pussy in front of God and everyone.
This podcast is just us trying to, like, one up each other for the
yeah,
worst
it's
possible
true. We're
thing
just
to
trying
say.
I
dare
we're
you to be
our
pussy.
To say the worst sentence.
One of my notes is just pussy question
and
mark.
You know what? Yeah. Yeah. Thussy. You shouldn't have even put a question mark there. Should have been a period. Thussy.
We do serious analysis here on this podcast.
We really do. I'm trying to think of something smart to say, because there's a lot of interesting stuff in this movie, but all I can think about is thussy.
I love a minimalist score. I love a score that, I think especially in a movie like this, it helps to add to the groundedness of it. Like, insane things are happening on screen, but they feel very real because the score isn't going nuts. Like, it's very restrained, and I appreciate that.
Which is funny, because, like, when you think of John Carpenter scores, you think of a bitch going ham on a synthesizer.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Which is just not this movie's score at all.
No, it reminded me a lot of the score for The Exorcist, which is also very minimal and only kind of serves to heighten the intensity.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, droning noises and, mm-hmm. like, weird atmospheric, like, wah, like, that kind of stuff.
Yes. I love an atmospheric score.
It's fantastic, and it does so much to ground this movie, again, to balance out the craziness of the scenes where the alien does what the alien does with something the rest of the movie feels like almost documentary-esque.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, it's got that kind of, like, just guys being dudes out in the Arctic.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Oh, God. This, you know, guys being dudes, aliens being dudes.
Aliens being women, please don't erase her identity.
Well, she, okay, but she does disguise herself as dudes.
That's true. Non-binary alien, question mark?
Non-binary femme? Non-binary icon.
Non-binary femme?
Absolute
is this anything?
Legend. We stand. We stand. New headcanon just dropped.
Good for her.
Okay, question. Answer. I have an important question for you.
Go for it.
Do you think either of them were infected at the end?
So this is pointing...
Because I think the answer is neither of them were.
I think that's the most interesting answer, for sure.
Yeah.
However, Childs is not, like, breathing right. He's, like...
I know!
I think he's the thing. I think he's she.
He's she. He is she. She disguised as he.
But I do think the more interesting... And listen, I don't think there is an answer. I think it's very...
No, I'm not trying to say that there yeah. is a definitive answer.
Oh, no.
I'm just like, it's all about your opinion.
Yeah. I would be interested in examining any one of those answers. Neither of them, both of them, one of them. Like, they're all equally interesting to sort of pick apart. And we've said it before, we said it in our episode on The Lighthouse. I love an ambiguous ending. I love ambiguity. Please give me things to think about when I'm walking away from your movie. Says the Marvel fan, I know, but, like, listen.
Don't explain shit to me.
I contain multitudes. I contain multitudes. Don't explain shit to me.
I think that the best and most interesting answer to this question is that it is neither of them.
Yeah.
Because in that way, the thing really did kind of win in the end, because it ruined these two dudes' lives to the point that they will never be able to safely rely on one another.
Yep.
And that's, I think, almost sadder than one of them being the thing. Although, I am interested, because this is something that I didn't even think of when you said both of them.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. I had not even thought of that, but the idea that it is both of them is fascinating to me, because that implies a level of taking on the persona of the person that it becomes, such to the degree that it might even, once it gets far enough along, believe that it is them?
I'm gonna be honest with you, Taylor. I didn't even think about the full, I was just sort of railing off my options. I didn't even think about the implications of that, but that is something.
The idea that they are both infected, and yet they are both standing there thinking, I'm infected, this is a human.
Yeah.
I have to still be this guy.
Whew.
That's bonkers.
That's good. That is really fucking good, actually. Hey, anybody out there, have you, like, actually considered this? Hey, guys, let's think about this. Let's consider this.
That's somehow, like, the most fucked up answer, is that, like, now the paranoia has been sowed so deep that the thing doesn't even trust itself.
Hey, Taylor, what if there were two guys on the moon and one of them killed the other with a rock? How fucked up would that be?
That would be so fucked up, dude. What if there were two guys in the Arctic and one of them killed the other with a flamethrower? Would that be fucked up or what? Or, like, a gun?
Or a gun.
Or a gun. A lot of people just get shot.
R.I.P. to that one guy who wasn't even a thing and got shot anyway.
That was so fucking bonkers. Oh, God. Yeah, paranoia runs so deep. Kurt Russell just fucking pew pew. Totally human guy.
That was the sound
one hundo
human. That was actually the sound effect they used in the movie, pew pew.
Yeah, pew pew. Yeah, that was, they actually, I was the Foley artist for
yeah,
this film.
Yeah, believe it or not.
I was actually alive. And not wherever you are before you're alive. And I came, I did this, and then I went back into my mother's womb.
You went back, you assimilated back into
years.
The ether, yeah.
And I was born.
Yeah.
God.
Your life is so fascinating.
Yeah, I know. I've lived a kind of a crazy life. A lot of people don't know this about me, but I've lived kind of a crazy life. But yeah, I think the ending is so fucked up. And sad.
Yeah.
It's sadder than it is scary.
Mm-hmm. It's so bleak. It is so bleak and so desolate. And I want to swallow it whole like a python with an egg.
It's true. Because no matter what the... Because there are people... And I'm going to go off on a little rant.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I'm sitting down cross-legged on the reading rug. Please, Miss Taylor. Please tell me.
There are people, this is a kind of horror fan that I do not like, that I have a very, just a distaste for, who will write, who will take anything with like an ambiguous ending or like aspect of the plot that is never explained, and will write long, long Reddit posts about how they are sure that John Carpenter's intention was for it to be this. And it's not even that it's like... Because everyone has their own opinions on what they think would be the coolest interpretation of any given piece of media, or like the interpretation that interests them the most. But to take something as intentionally ambiguous as The Thing or a movie like it, and to reduce it down to like a... the John Locke conspiracy type of, like, here are all of the clues
all right,
that
Taylor,
none of
well,
you saw.
Well, congratulations, you finally said something worse than Thussy in bringing the John Locke conspiracy into our good Christian podcast.
Hi, everybody. My name is Taylor, and I was a Sherlock fan in 2012, and it changed me in ways that I don't think I'm ever going to recover from.
I think one of the only
but
things that
I am that working
I,
to unlearn.
One of the only things that I have going for me is that I was more of a Doctor Who person in 2012. I watched one I watched one season of Sherlock, pretended to like it, and then was like, I'm not going to watch anymore, though.
You're so lucky that you were never where I was mentally in 2012.
I'm so sorry. But
anyway, I know what the John Locke conspiracy is, and some of you motherfuckers on Reddit are starting to sound like the John Locke conspiracy people, because you're like, this is what John Carpenter for sure and for actual meant by this intentionally ambiguous ending. And if you disagree with me, then you're wrong. Motherfucker, you're stupid. I'm sorry, you're stupid.
No, you're stupid. Like... The idea of needing your opinion validated so bad that you have to, like, say that, oh, this is what the director intended. It's like, buddy, just have an opinion. It's okay. We all
have to. Just sit comfortably with a movie not giving you an answer and not feel the need to know everything. You can have your opinion on what you think something means, or, you know, what you think, who, one or both of them, or, you know, whatever, neither of them was infected. Fine, whatever. I have my opinions on that, too. Now, because of Jemmy, I fully believe that it was both of them.
But that's my interpretation. But an offhand comment that I made, I love this. Like, I didn't even think, yeah. I wasn't even thinking. I was just, like, rattling off, like, what all the options for that scenario. I didn't even, like...
No, but, like, I'm fully in it now. I think it was both of them.
I love this.
I think it was both of them.
This is my impact, my influence.
Anyway, that's my rant. It's a very silly type of person that I don't like. That is very pervasive in the horror community. And I find it silly. Can't you guys just appreciate a movie for what it is?
No, Taylor, I need my Ending Explained video right now!
It's the same genre of guy as the Ending Explained motherfuckers.
It's like,
can't we sit with our ambiguity?
Can't we all just have tell you nothing? Different opinions and be fine with that?
Let's just be nice, guys. Hey, guys.
Like I was saying, we were talking about this off mic, but, like, we need to go back to kindergarten. Everyone needs to go back to kindergarten and learn how to share and be considerate. And if you don't have anything nice to say, say it in the group chat and don't speak.
It's just a very silly type of person. Share it with like-minded
individuals, be a little hater in private, and leave people alone.
Because I think the biggest strength of this movie, well, I think there's two big strengths. I think it's the ambiguity and it's the cynicalness of it.
Mm-hmm. The bleakness.
Neither, like, the cynicism I am usually not super into in horror movies. But sometimes a movie just does it in such a way where I'm like, oh, work, bitch. Like, maybe love isn't strong enough.
It's like this and Hereditary for you.
It's this, Hereditary, and it's The Exorcist 3, which we will talk about one day because I love The Exorcist 3.
Oh, yeah, the old man Yowie movie.
The old man... I don't like that your first thought when I brought up The Exorcist 3 was, yeah, the old man Yowie movie.
Well, the only
like,
thing you talked to me about it was old man Yowie, so of course it's the old man Yowie movie to me.
It is the old man Yowie movie, but like...
It is old man Yowie enjoyers out there, and I know you're out there because I see it everywhere. Watch The Exorcist 3. It's for you.
Yeah, you guys need to watch The Exorcist 3. I haven't looked in the archive of our own tag for the thing, but I'm sure that people want these men to fuck each other.
Oh, they have to, right?
They have to.
They have, like, at the very least, they have to want MacReady and Childs to fuck. Like,
I love that moment where we both just fell silent, where we were, like, contemplating.
Contemplating the horrors.
What the AO3 tag for the thing 1982 looks like.
It's gotta be a lot of MacReady Childs, right? Like,
probably.
They hate fuck. I could see it.
Oh, yeah, you know they hate fuck. Yeah.
Guys who do not like each other, but will fuck each other.
They're not old men.
They're not.
It's just Yowie. It's just man Yowie. Yowie. It's just Yowie.
They are old men in the eyes of, like, people who are, like, young.
That's true.
Like, so I guess sometimes some ways, 30 is an old man.
I guess in some ways, the thing 1982 is old man Yowie.
This movie is about an enterprising girl boss ridding the world of old man Yowie.
And the men around her who just want to touch tips until she bursts onto the scene and girl bosses her way to the top.
And that's it. That's the movie.
Aren't you guys glad that you come to this podcast to hear us talk about, like, the most, like, important and, like, serious things?
This is a staple of the horror genre. This is the, like, sci-fi.
What, old man Yowie?
Yeah.
Listen, I will state definitively, old man Yowie is maybe the most important part of any horror movie.
You're so correct.
We've gotten so off track.
I think we're right on track.
That's true. If you want to hear, like, people talking seriously about this movie, there are other
podcasts.
There are
so many people have said smart, we've said plenty of smart people things already. So many other people have said smart people things. You come to us to hear about how the thing is actually about a girl boss killing old man Yowie. When I say old man Yowie now, it's more like the way you say old man Winter. We need to stop. Can you please do Lens Lot Better Boss?
He's like a spirit who watches over us.
Can you please read some Letterboxd reviews, please?
Oh my god. It's a great note to end on, guys.
I'm decreeing now, Live Laugh Letterboxd begins. No more. We can't let this, I have to contain it. I am right so, now Kurt Russell with the flamethrower putting an end to this. With the fucking dynamite.
Who would have thought that this would be maybe our most chaotic episode?
Oh, what's who worse? Old Man Yowie or BDSM Scrooge?
Christmas Carol BDSM?
Yeah, those are like the two top ones for me.
What about how the lighthouse is all of the letters of the LGBT acronym? That one's up there.
That is up there. The inherent lesbianism of the sea. Anyway,
yeah, the inherent lesbian. Yeah,
Liz Love Letterboxd. We're guys, doing it.
Guys, I do a segment that you might have heard of on this podcast called Live Laugh Letterboxd. I don't know why I said that you might have heard of.
You might have
like
heard
you've heard
it.
Tales. You've heard tales of Live Laugh Letterboxd.
Whispered of.
I read funny Letterboxd reviews in this segment, which used to be like the bit of the podcast where we do funnies, but now the whole thing is just that.
Yeah.
The first review comes to us from Jay, and yes, I did check to see if it was our friend Jay, and it was not.
Aw.
But this feels like something that he would post.
I think he would enjoy this. Well, no, he's not a big horror person, so he probably wouldn't be okay with the thing as it was, but I think
he'd like the Old Man
Yowie. Yeah, he'd like the homoeroticism of it all.
So Jay, not our friend Jay, says, would I trust Kurt Russell with my life? Absolutely. Would I trust Kurt Russell with my dog? Not a chance in hell.
Not after this movie.
Brian W. Collins says, for almost 40 years, people have been asking if it's MacReady or Childs, when the answer is neither. The credits clearly say that it's John Carpenter's The Thing.
John Carpenter is The Thing.
Yeah, we know this about him. Yeah. That's why he's so cool.
Yeah.
He's got a girl boss alien inside of him.
True.
Here's another review from that same person. Actually, this was the review that I was thinking Jay could have written this. Mm-hmm. Cursed review, 80s Kurt Russell could give me the thing. 5 stars. Love you, Jay.
Love you.
Friend of the pod, Jay. Siobhan says, I'm the fact that every time Kurt Russell steps outside in Antarctica, he has to wear his sombrero-looking floppy hat. 4 stars.
Listen, sometimes a bitch has the signature part of their outfit, and they have to wear it no matter what.
It's true. It's true. For me, it's my little Reanimator VHS earrings.
I bet somebody really cool gave those to you.
No, just this, like, loser I do a podcast with.
Wow, fuck you.
No, the coolest person I know gave those to me, actually.
Mine is this fucking plastic 90s black choker that I just still wear in 2023.
I love that. Like, to me, that is an essential piece of the Jemmy look.
I've gotten
is
to
the black choker.
I have to take it off to sleep because I can't sleep with jewelry on, but it's gotten to the point where I look at myself in the mirror in the morning, I'm like, I look wrong, and then I put the choker on, I'm like, oh, okay, there we go.
It's me. I'm back.
It's because I have a long
John
fucking
says,
neck.
You gotta break it up somehow.
I do.
It's okay. I have a big head. Together we are one normal-sized person.
So true. I think if you combined us, because you're really tall and I'm really small, if you combined us, we'd be, like, average height.
Yeah, we'd be, like, 5'6".
Yeah.
John says, I ain't never seen two pretty best friends. One of them always got to stop halfway through the transformation process. 3.5 stars.
So true.
Ava says what I think we're all thinking, which is Copper was serving cunt with that nose ring.
Oh, he was.
4.5 stars. And finally, Vinny says simply, what the dog doing? 5 stars.
Good fucking question, Vinny.
What the dog doing?
Nothing good.
No. Well, in real life, he was doing good things. He was having a storied acting career.
Give Jed his Oscar. Give
posthumous
him,
Oscar.
Give him his Oscar. Give him his Emmy. Give him his star on the Walk of Fame. Induct him into whatever halls of fame you possibly can.
Is there a dog hall of fame? He should be in it.
He should.
Now, how would you rate this movie?
4 stars.
Yeah,
it's a good
I'd say
one.
4 stars.
It's a good one. It's not a Jemmy classic, but it's a good one.
Yeah, it's a really slay good time. If you're into the horrors, then you should watch it.
And if you're into Old Man Yowie.
And if you're into Old Man Yowie, you should watch it. And if you're into men looking like just the just absolute specimens,
peak male performance. This.
Peak male performance. No one is doing it the way Kurt Russell was doing it in the 80s. No one. Hi there, Editing Taylor here, coming to you live from a little while after we recorded the episode. Normally this is where Jemmy would tell you all about the next movie we're covering on the show, but our plans have actually been derailed just a little bit, so the episode that we had planned for next time is actually going to happen a month from now, and instead of what we had originally planned, our next episode will be on 1988's Waxwork, which is a movie that we have been wanting to do on the show for a very long time. You guys are gonna love it. It's bonkers. It's fantastic. I'm not sure that I can do our usual outro as good as Jemmy does it, but I'm gonna give it a shot anyway. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow our social media at FGFpod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And remember to give us those 5 stars on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, do whatever it is that you do on your podcast platform of choice to let us know that you liked what we did here today. And we will see you next time for Waxwork. Bye, guys!